Thank you, Ryan. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. It's Thursday. Should be a good show. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It should be a good show. We could screw that up, but I'm looking at it on paper. This looks like a good show.
It always looks good on paper.
Yep. That's the trouble. Are you as disappointed? The Blackhawks played game one, of course, against the St. Louis Blues last night, and they came up just a little bit short.
It was so long and uneventful.
Well, I don't mind the occasional game. That was a defensive battle all the way through. There was a period where the Blues only had two shots in the whole 20-minute period.
I know.
The Blackhawks only had eight. That's a low number of shots in a period. But it was a real defensive battle on both sides. And I don't mind that occasionally, but I wouldn't mind seeing a game with a lot more scoring. I think we'll see that eventually.
Yeah, and typically I've noticed the Blackhawks have really been scoring a lot of goals.
All in bunches,
I mean, it's been pretty high-scoring games for hockey.
It has, without a doubt.
So this was a kind of a disappointment.
But you guys aren't nervous, right? It was the first game. Someone had to win that one.
Right.
I mean, it was almost like, who's actually going to want to win this game, you know?
The disappointing thing is that it happened on a very fluky play.
Yeah, TBR, did he score for them?
He did. Accidentally. I mean, it bounced off his skate. There's not. What could you possibly do?
Nothing,
there's no way.
Do you want to be him today?
Not today. There's other days I wouldn't mind being old DVR, but not today.
And we talked to TVR, not DVR. You're
CPR.
Mixing up TiVos.
Is it
and
CPR? Is it R&R? What
DVR.
Is it? I don't know what it is.
R&R. We talked to him. He's great. He's a great player. It's just, God, that's not good.
It's the flukiest thing after 69-point-something minutes of hockey. A puck just accidentally hits that part of your skate and bounces in. There's no way to prevent that.
It shouldn't
that.
Count.
Well, the rule is that when you score a goal, it has to hit your stick last, unless it's an accident. Then it could bounce off of any part of you and go in, and that's what we saw happen yesterday.
And with Andrew Shaw, when he did the headbutting, had he not pushed his head forward,
right,
that would have counted.
Because it was an accident.
Those were Brazilian rules where he was trying to head that ball in.
Right.
Or the puck in.
Right. Right.
It's weird that we hear Brazilian because our producer Kevin Richter is off today because he's sick with the Brazilian flu.
He has friends of his in town from Brazil, so I imagine they're at the Rainforest Cafe right now.
Swapping Zeta virus?
Zika.
Zika.
What's wrong with you people?
I don't know, man.
DVR and Zeta. Yeah. That's what we're going to call you guys for the rest of the day.
That's our cabaret show that Brian and I do. DVR and Zika. Come and see us. We're at the Candlelight Dinner Playhouse.
So welcome to Elif Garris, who is our producer today. And I would like her to stay forever because her penmanship is much better than Kevin Richter's.
She's incredibly efficient. Penmanship's outstanding.
Kevin writes these words, and we have posted some on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. You can't tell, he'll put a name for instance, Steve Bertrand.
Right.
And the other day it looked like Slam.
Steer Boomin.
I can't.
Thought Steer Boomin was doing our news.
It's so bad.
Or Stan Bowman from the Blackhawks.
He would never.
He's got bigger fish to fry than that. So, Elif will be producing when you call in, and you can at any time at 312-981-7200. It'll be her voice that you hear, and she'll make everything work. A lot on today's show. People want to know if Eric Spitznagel will be on the show today. Yes, he will.
Yeah, but he's on the show for two separate reasons. You just like to have people with strange names.
I do enjoy. During any pitches for guests, as we are told the guest, if they have an interesting name, I always say, yeah, let's have them on.
Well,
I
want
to know
him
what
on
they've done.
Because, today is we're getting closer to National Record Store Day. And we talked to Val Camaletti of Val's Holla on the other day. Mm-hmm. It's coming up this Saturday, and this book has completely sucked me in and
because
fascinated
why?
Me. Old Records Never Die, One Man's Quest for His Vinyl and His Past. Jeff Tweedy of Wilco did the foreword for this book from Eric Spitznagel. And it's just a quest of when you get rid of a record. That's my problem. I never got rid of any. We have metal shelves in the basement with thousands of albums on there.
Yeah.
But some people purge, unlike myself, and get rid of records. And he is trying to locate his records that he gave away that original, like with his name on it.
The actual ones, yeah. Not just another copy
right.
of that. Oh, that's impossible.
You would
think. How will he do that? I don't know how he'll do that.
Well, we'll talk to him in a little bit.
I know you didn't get to see this, and Ryan, you weren't here yet, but there used to be a room here. I've told you about this room.
The safe room?
Yeah, it was essentially a safe room in the back. The way that WGN is structured here in the building at Tribune Tower is different than it used to be. We used to have almost the entire first floor. We don't anymore. There's a restaurant behind us now. But where Howells and Hood is now, the restaurant used to be all WGN offices and supplies and things like that.
How cool would that have been?
It was. Now it's upstairs, but it used to be down on the first floor. And when they had it that way, when it was situated that way, there was a room. And I call it a room, but it was strangely shaped. And it was filled
like
to
an
the
alley?
Brim. Yeah.
Like long and skinny?
Yeah. And it was filled to the rafters with every record you've ever heard of, because there was a time where you didn't have cassettes or anything. You put the record on and played it on the radio, and they had all of them. And we went back there. It was Steve and Johnny who took me back there, and they showed it to me. And when we were moving upstairs, their rule here at GN was, if you go in there and you see something you want, it's yours. Take it.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe, isn't it?
I would have had a big old U-Haul parked out front, double parked.
Somebody took almost everything. I saw at the very end there were a couple hundred still in there, and I don't know what they did with those couple hundred. But somebody did come in and take most of them. I didn't take any of them.
You didn't grab the Smothers Brothers album?
I had them all. I have all those.
I don't need that. Duplicates.
Those I have.
Well, do you have a turntable?
I do, yeah.
Hooked up and operational?
No. No. But I mean,
how
I
about
know,
your clothes and play? Does I, that still
that's
work?
Always ready. I always have my clothes and play ready.
Because I have to borrow, you know, kids today. And if you go to, I think it's recordstoreday.com.
Yeah.
There's a listing of an unbelievable amount of special issues just for Record Store Day.
There's some top artists every year.
Oh, yeah.
They want to be a part of this.
There's a picture disc of David Bowie that's going to be limited availability that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting stuff ready for my income tax, and I saw last year at Val's Hala, I spent $278 on Michael's albums.
And I bet quickly, too, right?
Yeah, but he has a stack of what was in the WGN record room, and then we have to go through it. And I say, okay, Michael, do you really need that? But there are some really unique, I don't know, you make a black vinyl album that all of a sudden is orange.
Mm-hmm.
I say you got to get it.
If
it's an artist you like.
You mean just for collectability reasons? Yeah. Because it won't sound any different. It's just in your head, you know, you have that special edition.
Yeah, but it's cool. So I have to ask him. I got a couple of Linda Ronstadt oldies but goodies. And I have to ask him if I can use his turntable.
Oh, you do?
Because it's all hooked up
what
and operational.
What a reverse.
I know.
What a strange reverse. You tell me, because I can't figure this out, because my ear isn't trained enough to appreciate this. But I'm fine with getting songs on iTunes and having them on an iPod and playing them. I'm fine with that. But people I know who are so into the music business go, oh, no, it's vinyl or nothing. You can't play them that way. The digital sounds, they're nowhere near as good. They sound as good to me. What's the difference?
They might sound better, but I love the crackles and hisses and pops. I really do.
The flaws of it all?
Kind of, because that's what I grew up listening to.
Yeah.
And you left early the other day. You were on special assignment.
I just lost interest. Tuesday, midway through, I'm like, I don't get this. I walked out.
But when I was talking to Val, we were talking about something so sacred about a record album. When you would go get my first album I ever bought was Van Halen 1, VH1. Mm-hmm. And you would grab the record, you'd take the cellophane off, and you would just look at it, and you'd flip it over and look at it, and then you'd pull out the sleeve and read all the liner notes.
Right.
It was something that you touched and appreciated. And when you get your music digitally, you don't have any
of
that.
It's not there.
You can't physically hold it in your hand. Likened, I think, to like books on your Kindle or what have you. I like to actually hold a book and turn the pages. And
no, I get that. I'm with you on that.
So I think that's what all the love of vinyl is. So people who are really into music want to collect and touch and hold the records.
The only thing I can think of is there's that second and a half when you put an album on, where you put the needle down, and you hear that. The song hasn't started yet, and it's not totally quiet, you hear that, and then you go, oh, there's music coming. I've got music just a second away.
I am much like Pavlov's dogs at that point. I start salivating and waiting for the music to kick in. It's, you know, anticipatory.
Yeah, that's it. Even though, I mean, it's the shortest bit of time, but it's just that, okay, there's it's like a fuzzy noise. It's not quiet and it's not quite music yet, but it's on its way, you know? So, I guess there's something to that. All right, there's people that want to chime in on this, and we want you to. We're at 312-981-7200. It's a big show. We're thrilled that you're here. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. The calls are coming in at 312-981-7200. The calls and texts.
All right. We were talking about the quality of records. And if you're going, I remember when the first Walkman came out.
Mm-hmm.
One of my older cousins had it because he was a working man and he bought it himself. And we were at a family party and he's like, check this out. And I remember, I mean, we had headphone radios you could put on, but this was something extraordinary.
Of course.
The clarity of a Sony Walkman.
And the miracle of shuffle, because usually if you made your own mixtapes, the songs pretty much came in the same order every time.
Right.
But now it was up to chance.
It was pretty amazing, and it sound everything was digitally remastered. I don't know. I'm kind of an analog lover. But it was crisp. It was clear. All these classic albums, like all the Led Zeppelins and the Doors, they were all remixed. So all of a sudden, you had been listening on the radio to these songs for years, and now all of a sudden, you heard a little flourish of a guitar that you didn't hear originally because they remixed it.
Right.
And it was really cool, but something just brings you back to touching an album, and it just brings something, memories, basically.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It really does. And Ray, how did you like to listen to your music?
Well, just recently, I was cleaning out the basement, and then I had two turntables.
And a microphone?
No, but even with the 8-track player in there. And hey, Wendy, did you ever listen to music reel to reel?
Yeah, occasionally. When I first got into radio, there would be stuff, but not
that,
really.
That is the ultimate. When I was in high school back in the 70s, we had a music teacher, and he took us downtown to the symphony orchestra, and then he played the reel-to-reel within the classroom. It just sounded like you're in the Chicago Symphony Hall.
They were right there.
You get more depth with reel-to-reel?
Yeah, you know, it's very expensive. It's a very expensive equipment, but if you're really a music junkie, but the vinyl, you can't beat the vinyl between the two. With digital and all that, there's no comparison.
And you can play with the speed, which is kind of fun, too, you know, where you can speed it up or slow it down.
It's fun to have the orchestra sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks, isn't it?
Hey, Wendy, if you like that, there was a thing on TMZ about helium beer.
About what?
Helium beer.
Helium beer.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that. I don't know what you like about it.
Yeah, in Germany, they had the whole bar. Everybody talking like
that. That would be fun. All right, well, thanks for reminiscing with us, Ray. We appreciate it. That's how I learned to edit, and that is...
Off of reel to reel.
And it was so fun because you'd have splicing tape, you'd have a razor blade, and you would have to cut the tape and leave it in the order, like... that you wanted, and then so you wouldn't forget. You'd have to take, like, you'd have three long strips of tape, and that third thing is what you wanted to insert.
Yeah.
But you couldn't mix it up. So you used to watch. I was like Ray Rayner. I would have, like, reels or little pieces of tape just coming down for me instead of Post-it notes.
And would you say the process is a little bit easier now?
Anyone can do it now.
Yeah,
but I have to tell you, I kind of feel proud that that's the way, you know, an old school radio production, that's how you learn to do it.
Yeah.
So you kind of got the feel for it more. Mm-hmm. Now with everything digitally, you just kind of match up the little...
The bars.
Yeah,
right?
pretty much.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how to do it, but I watch, like Kevin does it or Elif is filling in today, and I watch them do it, and it takes a fraction of the time that it used to take, and then it sounds cleaner,
I
too.
Know.
It's so much better. But I get the purists who go, no, the old way. That's the way to do it.
We're talking reel to reel. Mel is on the line. Hi, Mel.
Hi, how are you?
We're good.
Hey, you remember Murphy in the Morning, Robert Murphy?
Sure.
Yeah, Bill is wearing his straight jacket right now.
I bought it in a garage sale.
I used to call on the building that he lived in.
Yeah.
And when he moved out, he threw a box full of reel-to-reels out in the reel-to-reel player. And I have them in my basement, and I've never listened to them because I didn't know how to work the reel-to-reel.
But at least you own it. Who cares if you can run it? It's yours. It's in your possession. That's better.
I was kind of wondering if the rock and roll music place in Chicago would be interested in them.
In Murphy?
Yeah.
I'm teasing. I bet they would. I mean, at least to find out what's on it, it could be like his best bit ever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because, he was really funny and really good.
Sure.
He got good ratings back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even want to sell them. I would just donate them. But, I just think it's funny that you guys should be talking about those.
Well, you can go to the radio, I don't even know what it's called now.
The Museum of Broadcast History?
That's exactly it. Yeah. You can look it up online and email them and see if they'd be interested in going through them.
That's exactly who I was thinking.
Well, cool. Thank you.
And give him a shot.
You should go with and listen, because who knows? See, I love all that stuff. And to me, the funniest stuff of people in radio are the outtakes.
Oh, yeah.
When they're recording things, because most people, except for Bill, swear when they mess it up. And it's really funny.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Mel. Good luck with your quest.
All right. Here's what's going to happen. We'll do the news. Ryan's got the news for you. And then we will talk to the author of this book, Old Records Never Die. Eric Spitznagel joins us after the news. That's right. The Eric Spitznagel, Wendy, will be here. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Can I make a confession to you, Bill?
I wish you would. Yes.
It's Bill and Wendy here.
Wait, let me put my collar on for the confession. Hold on a second. Hold on. Okay, go ahead. Confess.
I'm not a huge Bon Jovi fan, but when I hear this song, I have to sing along.
Sure. This is a good... I'm not either, but I'll admit, John and the boys knew what they were doing with this one.
I know, and National Record Store Day is coming up this Saturday. I plan to go to Valhalla in Oak Park and buy some records, and I have saved all my records, but our next guest did not think ahead and did not save of his albums. His name is Eric Spitznagel, and Eric, I love your book, Old Records Never Die.
Thank you so much, Wendy. I appreciate that.
I am definitely a music lover, and I have... I'm not having a midlife crisis, and nor were you, but, you could buy, everybody says, get the smoking car, find a mistress, do that kind of thing. But you were on a quest to do something different. Why don't you explain this? Because I love it.
Well, I decided that I made a mistake when I got rid of my records in the 90s. I thought, hey, CDs, that's where it's at. And then, MP3s, the records were just a burden. I had somewhere in the ballpark of 2,000 records, and they just were so I was living in Chicago at the time and, going from apartment to apartment, and it was just a pain in the butt. So I got rid of them all, sold them for booze, money, bills, whatever. And then right around this, not much booze, I'll tell you that much. Records were not going for a lot. But Ryan, I'm in my mid-40s now, and it just I had an interview with Questlove for one of the magazines I write for, and he was telling me about his record collection, and he's like 70,000 records. And the first record, and he was talking about it so, with so much love, the first record he ever bought for $3.16, it was a 45 of the Sugar Hill Gang's, Rapper's Delight, and he's just so lovingly described that. And he said, you must have, a feeling about some of your records that are important. And I was like, oh, no, I sold all of mine. And he was so horrified at that. It was like I just told him I put a pillow over my dad's face and waited for him to die in front of me.
Wait. Eric, did you also do that? Because that's terrible.
And then I murdered my father.
Yeah,
that's his next book.
Really, that's awful.
Eric's next book will be that.
Old records never die, but my dad does when I suffocate him. All right, go on. I'm sorry. What happened?
I went looking for these records. I wanted to find my exact records. And for some reason, it was very important that it not just be kind of similar records. It had to be like the Bon Jovi record with my first girlfriend's phone number written on it, or the Replacements' Let It Be that spelled very much like weed and then had certain scratches and certain songs that I remembered, or the Kiss Alive 2 that my brother had written "hands off" on the front as a threat to keep me away from the Love Gun song that we love so much. And I really needed those specific ones. I thought, like, how hard could it be? Because I sold the majority of them to certain record stores in Chicago or the suburbs. So I just go back there and I say, hey, give me all your can I audit you and figure out who bought records from you and where these went?
And how much time had passed? Because it's, you know, I'm sure they sold them because they were great records and you had thousands of them.
Yeah.
So how much time had elapsed?
20 years. About 20 years. It was like 1996 that I sold the vast majority of them, 97. So it's impossible. Very much, if you think about it logically, as everyone I talked to on this journey said, you're out of your freaking mind.
Sure,
that's
of course.
That's never going to happen.
Yeah. So is there some good news?
Were there some good clues?
No, is there good news? Difficult. Did you find any of them?
I found one, which I find it so perfect that we started the segment with Bon Jovi. I found the Bon Jovi record with my first girlfriend's phone number on it.
With Believe Heather G's not, phone number? Did you call her then when you found the record and ask her out again?
I'm married, so that would have been awkward. And she's married too, so it would have been doubly awkward. But I was terrified at first because I called the number and it wouldn't be her. Or who wants to get a phone call from someone 20 years ago based on a Bon Jovi record? That's kind of creepy in many levels. Especially since at the time, I would never have been a Bon Jovi fan. And I was just pretending to like the Jove, as I called him, the Jove, so that she would go out with me.
That's so
funny.
Because
I love the Jove as much as she loved the Jove, although that was clearly, you know, just BS. But I ended up finding, you know, figuring out where she lives and, you know, like, could I bring out this record and show it to you? And was that your phone number? And she's like, oh my God, that's my phone number. Where did you find this? So I found the needle in the haystack. And as for the rest of them, you know, I don't really know. You kind of have to trust your own memory of whether that is that the exact scratch that I put in that Pixies album. I don't know. Does that when you're bringing old punk albums to play dates with your parent friends and saying, does this album smell like weed?
But you know,
hard to get a real read.
Eric Spitznagel on the line with us. You got to get his book, Old Records Never Die. Jeff Tweedy from Wilco did the foreword in this book. And every record, we were just talking about this before, you said you bought Bon Jovi, weren't really a big fan of the Jove, but you wanted to impress Heather. Each and every one of those albums right. We purchased had some meaning or connection to us, and that's why I hung on to mine, and I can't believe you sold all yours, Eric.
Yeah. I know. I can't believe you held on to yours. You're my hero. You really have all your records from your youth?
Yes, they're all. And my husband had a bunch of records, too. So for a while, it was kind of a status symbol when we moved in together. We had a whole wall of records. And, you know, people would come over and go, oh, wow, check that out. Well, now they're all in the basement. But we still have them. Okay. And when Bill and I are lucky enough to have people yeah. come in the studio, I just go to our little record store in the basement, pull out a record, and then they can autograph it.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Holy Lord. Yeah, I miss that relationship that I had with music via records. I mean, it's one thing to have an iPod that's filled with, like, I have 4,000 songs. I rule the music world. But those records, like the way a Pixies record felt in your hands or was very different from how, like, a Billy Joel record felt. And the experience you had to take that black orb out and put it on the record player and you would sit there and listen to it and study the record itself and study the sleeve and watch it spin around. And you don't have that experience anymore where you really have that intensity of focus with the music. I mean, now I feel more like a hoarder with MP3s that just get the music, get as much as possible, and I don't really pay attention to any of it. Well, it used to be that you just have these intense, intimate relationships with these records, and then the sleeves would start to, over time, it was like skin, the way they would weather and they'd get scars on them, and it was just very distinctive. And I wanted that relationship with music again. And even, you know, the impossibility of finding these records is one thing, but I want to learn how to be with music again and not have it just become like, I consumed it, I got it, it's in my brain now, and now
right.
I spit it out and I move on to the next one.
Eric, it's shocking to me that if you find this experience so romantic that you would have ever parted with these albums in the first place. That baffles me.
Well, I was an idiot.
Oh, all right. Well, then it does baffle me.
But you know, when you're in your 20s and you really think that you want to discard the past a little bit, you don't really think that clearly. I mean, I think, you know, you think to yourself, I remember thinking of myself at the time, too, like, oh, the Berlin Wall has fallen. Communism is over. America will never have another threat again. Mm-hmm. Like, you just, what you think with such clarity at one point, I mean, it never occurred to me that getting rid of these records was getting rid of something valuable. It was like, well, those jeans are too weathered. I get rid of those jeans. You know, that car ceases to work and I can get a better car that, oh, it's got GPS in it. You know, why would I think twice about getting rid of those old automobiles?
And that makes sense.
It doesn't occur to you.
Not in your 20s, but then, you know, 45, you start thinking about, wow, my life is pretty much half over. And then that's when you get nostalgic. Yeah. Although you should have done it at 33 because they're albums, not 45. So you should have done this at 33.
33 and a third. Yep.
You are a great writer. Your book is so easy to read. It strikes a nerve. Old Records Never Die, One Man's Quest for His Vinyl and His Past. You've written for Men's Health Magazine. Other books, Ron Jeremy's book, The Hardest Working Man in Showbiz. How fun was that to work with him?
That was unusual to sit around with Ron Jeremy.
Isn't he the nicest?
He is.
Nicest guy in the world.
I've never met a more polite human being in my life than Ron Jeremy, the adult film star, but it's true.
Yes, and he has got some tales.
Yeah.
He's a very, very friendly fella, and he has lived a life, and, you know, he's interesting because he's one of those guys that you don't have to know anything about the adult film industry. Like, my mom knows who Ron Jeremy is. He's bigger than he's kind of iconic in that sense.
At the last station Wendy and I worked at, Eric, we had Ron Jeremy on as a guest. Yeah. And normally if there's a guest on and people in the office know them, maybe you get one or two people straggle down and take a picture. 11 different women and a couple of the guys from the office all came to have their picture taken with Ron Jeremy.
Oh, man. Well, he goes. That speaks to his fame. So, but he's one of those guys, though, like, I'd hang out with him and he's like, hey, let's, you know, at his place, like, let's jump in the jacuzzi and share some stories. No, I'm not getting in a jacuzzi with Ron Jeremy. I just am absolutely not doing that.
And his stories would beat yours, too. You know that, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, hands down. Not even, there's no contest there.
All right, well, continued success with this book. You can pick it up at Amazon, or you can go to recordsneverdie.com. How'd you hook up with Jeff Tweedy of Wilco fame to write the foreword for this?
Well, I'd known his wife from back in the day in Chicago, and I'd done a couple of stories about his son, Spencer, and for the Believer magazine and other places, and then just through friends and kind of got to know him a little bit and told him about the record and said, hey, would you, not the record, told him about the book and, you know, what do you think about it? And he's like, you're nuts. That's never going to happen. But he thought it was interesting enough that he offered to do the intro, which is a huge deal. So, and now I'm helping him with his book, which is going to be fun.
Old MP3s Never Die. Is that what his book is going to be called?
It could be. Could be. We don't know yet, but we'll find out soon enough. But I don't know. Old MP3s just disappear into the void.
And you can't touch them and hold them and clean weed on them. I mean, that's what I don't like about the MP3s. Although someone has texted us and said, that's the problem with albums. You couldn't hide your weed in it. A cassette case worked much better.
That is true. Although I did hide my weed in my replacement's Let It Be, because I thought I was being so clever, because my parents would never think to look there, because clearly the replacements were all about booze, so why would my mom look for weed?
Mm-hmm.
It was like the thing, like, why would my mom possibly study the drug aesthetics of all of these artists? Like, oh, she's going to look at the Bob Marley record, obviously.
Yeah,
or the Grateful Dead. She's got to look at it. Yeah, no, that's not so smart.
Eric, thanks so much. It was fun talking to you. And again, the book is called Old Records Never Die. It's available wherever books about records that never die are sold. Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Wendy. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And it's recordsneverdie.com. It's really good. I'm only halfway through it, but so don't tell me how it ends.
I won't say anything.
All right.
Quick break. More show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Doobie-doobie-doo, where are you? We got some work to do now. Scooby-dooby-doo, where are you? We need some help.
I have to tell you something. You talk over music a second as soon as it starts. This is the only thing you let establish.
It's
why?
It's like the national anthem, Wendy. I can't talk over the Scooby-Doo theme. Like zoinks, what kind of a maniac would I be?
Very good.
Thank you. It's Bill and Wendy. Patrick McDonald is here to talk about films, and there's some big news in the Hanna-Barbera world. That's the reason
right.
we're playing the Scooby-Doo theme.
That's right. They... Warner Animation has announced that there will be a new Scooby-Doo animated film, not the live-action stuff.
Yeah.
And what they want to do is open up the wider Hanna-Barbera universe.
Now, let's go through what that means if you're a fan of 60s and 70s cartoons.
Right.
This is good news.
This is
go
very
through
good
a list
news.
Of who this could include.
Okay, this could include, of course, Yogi Bear.
Hey, boo-boo.
Mm-hmm.
We all have to do...
What's the matter, Yogi?
Oh, you're the cutest boo-boo ever.
Oh, that's nice.
Much better than Justin Timberlake.
Thank you. All oh, right. he did it in the last
he
one, didn't
did
he?
It
he
in did the last one, the and Aykroyd did Yogi Bear.
Yeah, right.
Huckleberry Hound.
Huckleberry Hound will be included.
Do him.
I can only do select Hanna
I know,
Barbera
I can't
characters.
Even remember what Huckleberry Hound sounded like.
Oh, my darling.
Yep.
Remember you always sang that?
Clementine, yeah.
Of course, Flintstones, Jetson, but here's an interesting one, Johnny Quest.
Love Johnny Quest.
Yes, with that odd animation they had.
Love Johnny Quest.
Was that kind of pre-anime?
Yes.
Yeah.
A little bit.
It was
limited animation.
Right.
You weren't getting a lot of animation, but the theme song was great.
I'm thinking of Speed Racer, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, Speed Racer was even less animation.
That was anime, though. That was from Japan.
Right.
Okay.
And they dubbed that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Johnny Quest could be involved
yes.
in this.
Space Ghost, of course, was on adults.
Space Ghost, coast to coast.
Love Space Ghost.
Who was the guy?
Gary Owens.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
From Martin's
yes.
Laugh-In.
How could I forget that?
Yes. Hong Kong Phooey.
Hong Kong Phooey.
Scatman Crothers doing the voice for Hong Kong Phooey.
Right.
Oh, my God, this is so much fun. Come by every day.
Quick Draw McGraw.
Also
quick
fun.
Quick Draw McGraw. Relative and, of Tug McGraw.
They were cousins.
Would they bring back Baba Looey?
That's the sidekick, one of the best sidekicks in cartoon history.
Yes, but is it politically correct now?
Oh.
What was he?
Baba Looey was his sort of Hispanic psyche.
What animal was he?
Baba Looey. What was Baba Looey? What was it? What, I can't remember the type of animal.
Quick Draw McGraw was a horse.
Right. I want to say, was he a dog? Was Baba Looey a dog?
How can you not know?
Well, there's so many cartoon animals.
Oh, yeah.
And Goofy is a good example of this, where they go, well, he's a dog. And you go, no, Pluto's a dog. Goofy doesn't look like Pluto. You know, they just kind of did ambiguous animals. It could be anything. We'll find out what Baba Looey is.
Captain Caveman.
Captain Caveman. I love that show.
Him.
Yeah.
And of course, to get an Avengers feel, the Laugh Olympics.
Scooby-Doo's Laugh Olympics.
Yes, Scooby-Doo's. Right.
All right. I loved that.
Olympics.
Yeah. That was three teams of cartoon characters every week that would square off in an Olympic type setting. And it was the same show every week, but it didn't matter.
It was like the cartoon version of Cage Match, kind of.
Or Battle of the Network Stars.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It was all cartoons.
Oh, that was so fun.
Right. Do you also remember the Saturday Superstar movie?
Yes.
Do you remember that? That was a freestanding story every week, but it was characters, sometimes literary characters, sometimes cartoon characters,
right.
but they would just expand on whatever their story was.
Well, didn't they pair Scooby-Doo off with a number of celebrities?
Yeah,
for a
always.
While?
Yeah.
I mean, like even like Laurel and Hardy.
Right. Mama Cass Elliot in an episode.
Right. Mama Cass.
Don Knotts in an episode.
What
the Harlem Globetrotters.
This?
For a while on Scooby-Doo, he would have a special guest star.
I do remember this.
Yeah.
But
for no reason at all.
The Harlem Globetrotters is the one I remember.
All
by the way, Baba
Looey. They appear in anything.
Who did Quick Draw McGraw's voice? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
Well, the same person
did.
Is it
Dawes Butler? Didn't he
do somebody
all the
Butler.
Voices?
He did almost everybody.
Yeah.
Okay,
the voice
and Baba Looey was a Mexican burro. spoke with a Mexican accent, a Mexican burro.
There you go.
So we might not be able to
have Ryan Burro.
Can we have Haji and Johnny Quest?
Oh, another, that's a great question. His friend Haji.
We had a friend Haji for a while.
Yes, we did. Still do. Well, okay. Well, this opens up all
this
kinds
does.
Of possibilities.
It
I would
does.
Love for this to happen. Because every year we could get a new Hanna-Barbera movie or two.
Yes, and, you know, see all the characters come to life again, you know.
Now, would it just be you and me and Patrick and
maybe
the audience?
Only three people there every week.
But see, now I beg to differ because, again, did this not bring you back to your childhood for a minute? So
sure.
I think it would go over very well.
But, for example, do any of your kids like the Hanna-Barbera characters?
Nope.
I don't think they've really seen. Yeah, I think mine have seen them. They like any cartoon.
They don't market them anywhere near as well. The Disney Corporation figured out how to sell these with stuffed animals and T-shirts and figures and everything. Hanna-Barbera is not quite as adept as that. For some reason, I don't know why.
Well, that's what makes those toys so rare.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Do you have the, didn't they have a series of Bubble Bass?
Yeah, they did do some stuff, not as much as Disney. I mean, did. They made
Mr.
some stuff.
Bubble, come on. He was the top of the line.
I know. He's very sick, by the way. I just read
Mr. Bubble's
Mr. Bubble's
sick?
Very sick. Yeah.
He's about to pop.
Yes.
Hi. What is your name? Polly?
Polly. How you guys doing?
Hi,
really
Polly.
Good, Polly. What did you want to say about this?
Okay. Johnny Quest.
Yes.
He's the father.
Yes. Dr. Benton
Dr. Quest. Right.
Yeah.
His voice was, that was his real voice. But he also did voiceovers for other characters. And one of them, or two of them, famous, were the original Bam Bam as a baby.
Really?
Boy, that's a tough gig. Bam Bam. Bam Bam. That's all you do.
Yeah.
Well, he did that. And also, he was the original Scooby-Doo.
So before Don Messick took over
as
Scooby-Doo, it was this guy?
Yes.
But you don't know it. We'll look up his name because I'm not sure what his name is.
Yeah. I'm
but
sorry,
that's quite that's quite an array of characters he pulled off.
Yeah, I mean he did a lot of voiceover work. I mean for a lot of the characters.
Yeah.
But the one character you guys were talking about earlier, I think Mel Blanc did a lot of them for Hanna-Barbera.
He did.
Yes.
He did. Yeah. Like 100 of them.
You know, he was involved in a very serious automobile accident while he was doing the Flintstones.
Yeah.
And Dawes Butler took over for the Barney character while he was recovering.
Yeah.
And then the cast would gather in his hospital room to record the episode.
Really?
Isn't that
How about that?
Was it Don Messick?
No, Don Messick was Scooby-Doo for almost the entire
run.
Well, he was Dr. Benton Quest.
Well, there you go.
So
and
that is
Bandit.
The same guy.
Yeah, Bandit was the dog.
Yeah.
They were supposed to be working on a Johnny Quest movie, you know, a live-action version.
Yeah.
And they had Dwayne Johnson was going to be playing the character of Ray Bannon, the bodyguard.
Oh, that's not a bad move. I like that.
All right, wait, guys, because Don Messick replaced John Stevenson. Is that who you're thinking about?
I think that was his name. I mean, you could check John Stevenson because I know he did. He was the father on Johnny Quest. That was his real voice.
Wow. All right.
I remember listening to an interview with him on another show years ago, and he mentioned that he did the original Bam Bam, and he was the original Scooby-Doo.
How about that?
We're going deep down the rabbit
hole. That's awesome.
I know.
Thank you, Pally.
Thanks, Pally. All right, take
guys.
Care.
All right. Take care.
All right. Dawes Butler. Do you know who that is?
Yes. Elroy Judson. Among many, many,
yes,
many,
he,
many.
He was one of their standard
Cecil
guys.
From Beanie and Cecil.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I got a whole page of everybody who's done voices. I know what you're going to be doing during the break.
All right. We have to take a quick break. Right. Patrick McDonald is here talking normally movies, but somehow cartoons have found their way into our conversation. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Apparently so.
Because that's the sound people make when they run.
Of course, with Hanna-Barbera, you would see the same background
always
over and over.
Backgrounds over and over. Yeah,
I could listen to this all day. Oh, gotta go.
Right.
Why don't you come along? Woo! I slipped on a banana peel.
Yep.
Oh, gotta stop.
Isn't it disappointing that in real life those aren't the sounds that occur? That would be so much more fun.
Yes, it would.
We're talking to Patrick McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com and FilmAutonomy.com. The reason we're so Hanna-Barbera heavy is we've just received news. This is hot off the press that Warner Brothers is announcing not only a new Scooby-Doo film, but plans to open up the Hanna-Barbera universe with all sorts of possibilities for future films. And when I say films, I mean animated films.
Correct.
They don't always translate to live action. Those Scooby-Doo movies from 15 or so years ago, they were okay. Yeah.
The Flintstones did not, though.
No.
Oh, wait, this just in. Yogi Bear is on the line. Hey, Yogi, what's going on?
Hey, boo-boo. Picnic basket.
I was told he does good impressions. Oh. Keep going, Yogi. Who's with you?
What about the Ranger, Yogi?
That's not bad.
Good boo-boo?
That's a good boo-boo.
Give us one more. Yeah.
Now he's just going to
reading yourself.
He did the Bill Leff impersonation.
He did the impression of me doing boo-boo. Right.
What else you got in you, Pete?
You were talking about Quickstraw McGraw.
Yeah.
Donkey, and it was, see, Mr. Quickstraw.
That's pretty good. That's
answer to everything.
All right, Pete, you lost it.
Thank you, Pete.
All right.
I thought he had a whole thing down. I'm sorry to interrupt this.
No, that's all right. Patrick, it's the 40th anniversary of the movie Bad News Bears.
Yes, the classic.
What did you want to tell us about the Bad News Bears? And that's the original with Walter Matthau as Coach Buttermaker and Tatum O'Neill.
Right. It was a reminder of a different time in childhood, I think. I think that's what that is directed by Michael Ritchie. And if you see three Michael Ritchie films, The Candidate, Smile, and The Bad News Bears, that will tell you everything about the 1970s that you need to
know. You're right.
That's
all
when you
excellent.
Dealt with coaches drinking and smoking, and you kind of helped them along.
Exactly. There's a great scene where Buttermaker's driving him in his convertible with the crack windshield. Nobody has a seatbelt on.
Right.
You know, he's drinking while driving.
Yeah. Great movie.
And was, when I was a kid, I remember that being one of the first movies where kids swore openly throughout the movie.
That was very notorious back then.
Why do you think I loved it?
Now, both the original and the remake with Billy Bob Thornton were written by a man named Bill Lancaster, who's the son of Burt Lancaster.
Very good. Yeah. Wow, there you go.
Are you guys going to just try and outdo each other all day?
Yep.
I cannot beat Mr. Leff on trivia.
Not many people can. I don't think anyone can, Patrick, so don't feel bad.
So, that was a big celebration to me.
And I have to ask you, there's a couple of movies opening this weekend. The one that I know you haven't seen, The Jungle Book, but I'm hearing good things about
it. Yes, it's getting some raves. And I think is, you know, a family movie. That's something that, you know, automatically I think families are going to want to see. What is unique about it, too, is that it was done entirely on green screen, but I guess it's spectacular scenery. And so it was The Boy and the green
Mowgli.
Screen. Yeah.
John Favreau, Chicago's John Favreau, directed this.
Yes.
He's made a pretty good name for himself from being just kind of a bit player in movies. He directed the Iron Man movies. He's put up a pretty nice resume.
Yes, he has. And he is still in. He's still the sidekick to Vince Vaughn. And, you know, and that's always good in the breakup, which, you know, that's on the Chicago Film Tour, which
gotta
we started.
Go.
Would you be embarrassed if we mentioned it really quickly? Has it started up for the season?
It has.
Film Tour. And if people want to
We're
get
doing Saturdays and Sundays with the Signature Tour, and we'll get the other ones going.
How do people find that, Patrick?
Call us, 773-593-4455. And then, of course, Barbershop opening today.
And you saw a Barbershop as well?
I did.
How was that?
It is sort of the Barbershop version of Chirac, interestingly enough.
Wait, what does that mean by the Chicago
version
of Chirac?
That means that they are dealing with issues in Chicago on the South Side in it. Yeah.
So this is a little more serious?
And I've heard better than Chirac dealt with
it. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. In the sense that, you know, it's based in a more reality sense, whereas Chirac is much more fantastical.
Thank you for being here today.
Yes.
Can I just say this ends our terrifying tale of Patrick McDonald and friends.
There's my wife. With your friend Spinner and Paddlefoot. thank
Which
you,
one
Patrick.
Are you?
I'm Paddlefoot. HollywoodChicago.com, FilmAutonomy.com. It's all there. And take Patrick's
And tomorrow tours. Night, I'm going to be moderating Luna Fest over at the Wilmette Theater. Stop by.
Very nice. Thanks, Patrick. We'll take a break. Some news from Kim next, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, I don't know if you'll remember this, but, you know, we have Dr. John Duffy in, top-notch child psychologist, and we discuss issues with him. He's in about every other week with us.
Next Wednesday he'll be in.
Yeah, always a pleasure to have him on. And I said to him, this is about a month and a half ago, I said, John, what is the residual effect with kids today with what's going on politically in our country with Donald Trump and the whole surrounding of the campaign of... I hate to say it's a campaign of hatred, but it is a fear-based campaign of hatred.
Make America hateful again.
So I said, is there some trickle-down effect to kids in school if they're subjected to this with any regularity?
Remember the woman texted in? She was a Mexican, and she said her kid is scared about things.
I do. Well, now there's a name for this, and it's not hard to predict what the name of it is, but it's called the Trump effect. There's a great story about it in the paper today. This is out of Washington. It says it's only a matter of time before kids started picking up on the aggressive, divisive language that's become a hallmark of the 2016 presidential campaign, essentially what we were saying about 6 weeks ago. According to a new report by the nonprofit Southern Poverty Law Center, it's entitled The Trump Effect, The Impact of the Presidential Campaign on Our Nation's Schools. The race, the presidential race, is stoking fears and racial tensions in America's classrooms. Now, think about it for a second. How could it not? This has been the top story, or certainly one of the top stories, for months now. And if you're a kid and you're even the least bit perceptive, you're going to figure out what's going on. It's on the news. It's on the internet. It's on the radio. It's on television. It's everywhere. So if you're a kid and you have a feeling for anything that's around you, and kids are sponges, they do.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You know? Here's what a teacher says. My students are terrified of Donald Trump. They think that if he's elected, all black people will get sent back to Africa. This is according to one middle school teacher. The teacher was one of more than 2,000 educators who opted to take a survey that was conducted by the SPLC's Teaching Tolerance Program. Again, SPLC stands for Southern Poverty Law Center. I have had Muslim students that have been referred to as terrorists, said another teacher who submitted comments to the survey.
Although I don't think Trump is responsible for that.
No, you know.
That's unfortunately been going on.
That, right, right.
Islamophobia.
It's hard to, yeah, it's hard to pin that on Donald Trump.
Even though you'd like to blame him.
He may have accelerated it a bit. You could certainly see where he would perpetrate it a little bit, but I can't blame him on it. I can't blame him for it. There is a boy from Mexico who is a citizen. This is another teacher speaking. There's a boy from Mexico who is a citizen. He's terrified that the country will deport him if Donald Trump wins. This is according to a third grade teacher. He's also scared that kids and grown-ups can and will hurt him.
Do you know how much pressure these kids have these days in school anyway?
Yeah.
The amount of anxiety and depression is up sky high in even young elementary kids in third grade. They shouldn't even be thinking about this.
You would hope not, but because it's such a huge story.
So sad.
And I know people always go, well, a kid that, if a third grader shouldn't be thinking, you just said a third grader shouldn't be thinking about that. But if you're just existing in the world and you turn on your computer or your television or your radio, you're going to hear the sound bites. The story's everywhere.
It is everywhere. And I don't know. Oh, hi, Dave. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how are you?
What do you think about this?
I think it's absolutely shameful that parents and educators are allowing children to think this way.
I don't think they are allowing it. This teacher is concerned.
Of course they're concerned, and I'm sure she's a registered Democrat. And if you look at it...
Really? Seriously, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen to this. So all these things that you're saying that kids are afraid of, Donald Trump has never said anything remotely close to that. This whole, blacks are going back to Africa. Where does that come from?
Well, that is the fear because the Mexican little boy is thinking, oh, they're building a wall and they're sending us back. And I think the other ethnic groups are starting to think.
And all it takes is a responsible parent to say, listen, I am here legally. I went through the process. There are people who broke the law and there are penalties to break. I've had this conversation with my children, not about Donald Trump, but about there are consequences for doing wrong.
And do you let your children talk when they try to talk, or you just steamroll over them?
Depends what they're trying to say.
Dave,
I hear this over and over again, and I think it's ridiculous that we're not looking at the people who is in charge of these parents and give them some responsibility. And maybe that's what's wrong with America today.
Can I tell you, the parents may not know that the kids are showing fear in a classroom because kids act differently at school than they do at home. And maybe the parents don't have a one-on-one conversation with the kid every day. You don't know what's brewing in someone else's house. Maybe they're super close and the parents are saying there is no need to worry, but the kids are bringing it into the classroom because deep inside they are worried.
And you know what? If my child is concerned, teacher, I find out about it because I'm in communication with his teacher. I'm a good parent. I'm sorry, but be a parent.
People who say they're a good parent,
don't rely on teachers.
Everybody tries to be a good parent. You think people intend to be like a crappy parent?
I know a lot. My mother-in-law is a retired Chicago public school teacher, and she will tell you there are a lot of people who are not good parents. I'll just put it that way.
But the people who say they are a really good parent, it's like, you know, a guy saying, oh, I like Donald Trump saying, I have a really big, you know, I little hands, but, you know, we all try our best. I don't think you can blame the parents on a little kid being scared.
I think you can absolutely say that parents need to be responsible and talk to your children.
Well, I'd agree with that.
Dave, that stems back to this.
That's a big picture, too.
At the beginning of this, I said we talked to John Duffy, and my question to him at the time was, if you're a parent and your kid is anywhere near the media, and every kid is, what discussion do you have with him or her as if to say, you can't let this scare you, it's politics, and it's an ugly game, but that's the way the game is played? Because a kid, a third grader, may not have the capacity to understand what's real in all this and what isn't. It is a stretch. If you're an African-American kid going, oh, no, if Donald Trump's president, they're going to send my family to Africa, I'll admit that's a stretch. But I do see where a Mexican kid could be a little bit confused by this, couldn't you, with all the talk about the immigration laws in Mexico and building a wall?
A really, really good friend of mine is Mexican. He's not a U.S. citizen. The rest of his family is. He's here. He's a legal resident alien. He was born in Mexico. He didn't get birthright citizenship. And we have this conversation because these are the conversations he has with his family. And I asked him, I won't say his name, but I said, listen, when you're having these conversations, I'm like, do you bring up, you know, what has Donald Trump actually said, or any of the candidates, not just Trump? And because I think it's important in any of the politics to
it
say,
is.
Listen,
sure.
Let's not look at comments that are attributed to other people. Like this whole, you know, when everyone was saying, oh, Donald Trump, you know, wants to make Muslim wear patches like the Jews.
Yeah.
That was completely fabricated, and look how much of a life cycle that had in the media. So again, as responsible adults who are paying attention to these things, it's our responsibility to educate our children and not let them rely on the news media. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous when I hear this, oh, they're afraid. Well, I'm sorry. The responsible adults in their lives are not doing their job.
Dave, I hate to do this to you or say this to you because you never, like I said, you never know what's brewing in someone else's pot. But I wish I could talk to your kids and say, do you have any fear of this? Because you as a parent, you've talked to them and it sounds like you're a responsible parent and you've done your job and you said, hey, there's no reason to worry about your friend getting deported. But they may go, you know, dad's just trying to, you know, sugarcoat this. I'm really scared. Some of this is irrational fear. And even though you're a responsible parent telling them the right thing, they may believe otherwise.
Right. And at the end of the day, and I don't doubt that this, you know, obviously stuff comes up at school that you don't have control over what they're going to talk about or what they're going to be exposed to. And that's life. But again, it still goes back to, and I've had this, my son is in first grade, and I've had this conversation with him about Trump. And, you know, because he mentioned on TV, and he goes, boo, boo. And I said, why do you say that? And I don't remember what the reason was. It was something silly because he's in first grade. And, you know, I've always kind of had this attitude with him is that I've never kind of talked child talk to him. I will be as honest as possible without trying to confuse them and scare them, obviously, you know, but again, it's just having that open conversation. And at the end of the day, he was asking me, who'd you vote for? And I said, you know, that's a personal decision. I'm happy to talk to you about why I vote a certain way just in general. You know, but it's not a conversation that I'm having with him because I don't want him to be oh, well, Dad's voting for so-and-so, so rah-rah so-and-so. He's seven. He doesn't need to worry about that right now.
You know what, Dave? I appreciate the conversation. I respect your side of the story, and we're here to talk about it, and that's what we should do, but we have to take a break.
I appreciate it. Have a good one.
Dave, thanks. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. Many more calls at 312-981-7200. We're talking about the Trump effect, why kids in school are afraid of what the country will be like if Donald Trump is president. Your thoughts, 312-981-7200. It's WGN. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. We're talking about a new phenomenon called the Trump effect. They interviewed 2,000 teachers. It says overall, more than two-thirds of the teachers who took the survey reported that their students, mainly Muslims, immigrants, and children of immigrants, were worried about what could happen to them and their families after the November election. That's what the Trump effect is. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in with your thoughts.
And Dave, we talked to Dave and we let Dave talk, and he just said it's the parents' responsibility to say, hey, there is no fear there. A text has said, we are a Caucasian family in a very Hispanic neighborhood. My second grader is worried, so all her friends must be worried too, that she's going to lose all her friends if they get deported. You just don't know. Rob, what do you think?
Well, I think in when you really stop and think about it, our kids don't live in bubbles. And so it's a little unfair to say, well, it's ultimately up to the parents. That's true to a certain extent, to a great extent. But it's really unfair to say, based on what we're hearing from this report, well, you know, the teachers, they're at fault, and the parents, they're dropping the ball. When the fact of the matter is, we've got a very, very nasty discussion taking place, and the kids aren't making this stuff up. They're really hearing this. And so I just think it's totally unrealistic to dump it all in someone's lap and say, well, if they just did a better job, kids wouldn't be freaking out. Well, the truth of the matter is, if we cleaned up the conversation, kids wouldn't be freaking out at all.
That's true. And you, I mean, and Dave made a good point. He's trying to have an honest conversation as adult as a third grader will hear. But you can't dismiss the fears that your kids have inside either. You can't just go, ah, you're going to be fine. You know, man up, suck it up.
That's exactly right, Wendy. That's exactly right. And the bottom line is the conversation really shouldn't be, oh, don't worry about it, don't worry about it, don't worry about it. The conversation should probably be more along the lines of, well, you know, do you have friends? How are your friends feeling? Instead of this dismissive, it's not really an issue, we need to enter into it and say, well, you know, these things have been issues for people in our country. Let's talk about that. And I want to know what you feel about it. I want to know what your friends think about it. And instead of just, you know, the simplistic, well, if you just handle it this way, it won't really matter. Like you just said, Wendy, exactly.
Conversation is key, and you have to have conversation. And if a kid's being fearful about something, maybe it's an irrational fear. Bill, you have an irrational fear of needles, but I don't dismiss it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not irrational.
No, it's totally irrational. Thank you, Rob.
Totally irrational.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Rob. Here's another text. Dear Bill and Wendy, this has been my fear, worry, disgust all along. I'm a school social worker and teach students about tolerance.
Yeah.
What good is it when adults and media do not abide by this tolerance?
Well, that's the thing we've been saying all along, is that mostly Trump's tactics, although you can take it now to almost all the candidates, there's five remaining candidates for the Republicans and Democrats, and at least four and possibly all five are doing that kind of a, you're a liar, you're not telling the truth, back and forth. It's childish tactics. I mean, they're using the same tactics that kids used in second and third grade. So there is some correlation. But I know the fear is real, because I've talked to people whose kids are saying, yeah, they hear little bits and pieces on the news, on the internet, on the radio, and they don't know what to make. Adults don't know what to make out of it.
Because we don't understand. What do you mean you're going to build a wall and Mexico is going to pay for it?
Right.
I don't get it. You don't get it. There are some people who said that they're in their 70s and they don't get it either.
Yeah.
And imagine a kid. It's like incomprehensible for a kid. What do you mean? How do they build this wall?
Right.
Is there going to be a door in the wall? I mean, they do have fears.
Trump has talked about sending vehicles around and rounding up people and sending them back to Mexico. And he's talked about how if you're a Muslim, that for the time being, we don't want you in the country. So you're a kid and you hear those little bits and pieces and you think, wow, that's really different from the way I'm used to living my life.
They told us it was the melting pot.
Yeah, it's not.
All right, everybody's talking about this today. Ringo Starr has now joined the list of Bruce Springsteen and I believe Bryan Adams, or is it Ryan Adams?
No, it's Bryan Adams. I know he canceled something the other day.
Shows
and Jimmy Buffett made some statement about not agreeing with the laws, but he wasn't going to cancel his show over it.
Oh, he needs the money.
Jimmy Buffett does, yeah.
Well, this is where people take notice, and Springsteen's pretty huge. He sells out and does like 3.5-hour shows.
Yeah.
Not saying anything's wrong against Ringo and he's not, you know, top of the heap. But if more people decide, hey, I'm not going to be in North Carolina anymore because of this state's House Bill 2, where basically in a nutshell, if you are transgendering, you have to use the restroom facilities of what is listed on your birth certificate.
You know, the cloud is only because the tickets are sold. You know, so it'd be different for Springsteen to say, I'm not going to stop in North Carolina.
Right.
Wouldn't hurt as much.
Right.
But I do feel bad for the people who hate the law, too.
Who are missing out on seeing his show.
Yes. Paid for the tickets right. And, you know, all of that.
Well, they'll get it refunded.
But still, they miss the experience of seeing him.
I know.
I mean, I get it. That's what he has. I mean, I get that he's doing it.
You're punishing somebody who shouldn't be punished.
That's how it always happens, though. Somebody's bad in class, the whole class gets punished.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Former classes.
Yeah.
I was usually the one. And we talked to Joe, a woman who said, you know, I hate to say this word, it's the evangelicals. And it isn't. There are some evangelical people that don't agree with this law.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, I got reprimanded in a text. And it's true. You can't say it's one group of people because that's religionism.
Yeah, I guess it is.
And then someone is claiming it's really fear. People are afraid. The issue is about fear of those who are different. I don't understand what there is to be afraid of.
Well, you know, Ted Cruz, not to be too critical of him, but he just used his words because he put it this way. He said, men should not be going to the bathroom with little girls, you know.
Well, that part's true, but you can't simplify it this way.
The implication is that someone who's transgender is going to go in there with the idea of, you know, doing harm to people.
Right.
They just want to go to the bathroom.
And someone, you know, to prevent pedophiles, people who are gay or transgendering does not make them a pedophile. That is a whole different thing.
Sure. Right.
And I just, well, here, let's just take the phone calls. All right.
All right.
Because there's a text, too, that is just, you know, I identify as a cat, so will you please put litter boxes out for me? I demand it. That's just stupid. So, Randy, I hope you weren't going to say that.
How did they text in if they're a cat? Come on, your paws don't accommodate for a text.
Hi, Randy.
Come on.
Hi.
What's going on?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Why do we even have to deal with their issues? Why do we have to deal with cross-gender issues? That's their choice. That's not something we or the government or anybody else is making them do or anything else. That's their choice. So why does everybody else, like you and I, have to deal with accommodating them?
Well, the problem is that this law came up in North Carolina stating you have to use what you were born, basically. The equipment that you were born with, you have to go into that restroom. If this law was not put into effect, no one would care. Just, you know, if you look like a woman, go in the woman's bathroom.
Exactly.
I agree with you, Randy. It's, you know, it's...
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's the world we live in now, Randy.
Yeah, crazy world.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Randy,
for calling. That was a crazy laugh, and I enjoyed it immensely.
Wasn't Mayberry in North Carolina in the Andy Griffith Show?
You would
what
know
were
that.
What the bathrooms like at...
Well, I'm worried about Thelma May.
Thelma May.
She's been in the bathroom a long time.
Thelma May not.
All right, Susan, you raise a great question, which Bill and I were just talking about off the air. Go ahead, Susan.
Well, does that mean mothers can't take their sons in the ladies' room or fathers can't take their daughters in the man's room when nobody's around to help them?
Yeah, that gets tricky, too.
See, because Bill has two girls, I have two boys, and it's pretty much standard procedure for moms to take young boys into the bathroom when they're still at that age where they need help.
Yeah.
But my question to Bill is, when his girls were little and Terry, his wife, wasn't with you wouldn't take him into the men's room.
No, I would not. And I was, as I was remembering back, I think every time we were in, and it's impossible to imagine this, but I think every restaurant or shop we were in,
or movie theater,
had what they call a family bathroom, where it was, you know, whatever sex you were welcome into that bathroom. But I know that couldn't be the case,
no.
Could it?
I mean, I've, you know, my husband has seen men take little girls into the bathroom. Unless you, would you rather trust a strange woman to take your kid into the bathroom for you? I mean, what do?
You just take the little girl in the man's stall and put her on the pot and let her go and come back out with her.
That's why all the urinals should be beyond the stalls. Because
that's right.
You shouldn't come in and get, like, you know, like the appetizer platter.
Is that what you call it?
Yes.
Is that true?
Hey, thank you for calling, Susan. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Maybe they should put, like, there should be a dispenser, like a blindfold dispenser when you walk into a bathroom, and you could just put that on a kid and just go, look, for the next 60 seconds, it's going to be really dark.
That's going to be, like, a total torture.
Right.
And kids will have to go to therapy after that.
Yeah, I guess so.
All the stalls are up front, you know, you get a – I don't know if your men's bathrooms are like this. I'm sure there are. But at big places like the United Center or wherever, you have, like, various ways you can go, like two aisles.
Right.
So why can't they just have all the stalls and stuff in that front area, and then if you need to use the urinal, you just walk beyond the stalls?
There's nothing wrong with that.
I've solved
better.
The world's problems right then or
that's a lot right easier.
Here. All right, another question, because we have questions, and that's why we talk about it.
Yeah.
Hi, Mark. Do you have a question?
Well, I got a comment. Hey, Bill. Hey, Wendy.
Hi.
Hey. My daughter's not real attractive, kind of a, you know, shot putter type.
Yeah.
Does that mean someone's
what? No, okay.
I knew you were kidding, Mark. I can tell by the laugh. But let's say hypothetically.
But wait,
Mark
I
had
ruined your joke. Go ahead.
Go on.
No, it's okay. Well, I do want to make a real point about this. Way back when I used to coach girls softball, and there was two twin girls who were probably 12 years old and had short haircuts and phenomenal athletes. And I literally got asked by other coaches in other towns to prove they were girls. And I'm like, really, how do you expect me to do that? So, you know, I get it in principle that, you know, we don't want people walking into each other's bathrooms. But really, number one, what can you do about it? Is somebody going to police it? And number two,
good question.
Like you were saying, there's stalls, there's everything else. And, you know, who's going to police this? You know, and actually, my daughter's not that attractive. So.
Oh, my God. Will you stop
note,
it?
Just as a side note, I love that another coach would call you out on the sex of a 12-year-old child like you were trying to throw a softball game at 12. That's so funny to me.
Oh, I know. Well, you know, they had short blonde hair and they had batting gloves hanging out of their rear pockets, you know, and maybe they were a little bit tomboyish, but certainly I'm not going to sneak in there with two boys on my girls. What 12-year-old boy are you going to get to play in a girl's softball?
Right.
All right. That's a good. That's the best question. And I was a tomboy. I know you find this shocking.
I don't believe you.
Before I wore makeup, I mean, without makeup now, I look like James Spader. So,
right.
I mean, I always looked like a boy.
How about that? Well,
thank
maybe
you. Maybe I am, Mark.
Sorry about your daughter, Mark.
See you in the bathroom.
That's okay.
All right.
Bye.
I like to picture his daughter just driving around town hearing, hey, my dad's on the radio. Hey.
That's why I'm sorry I ruined his joke, but I didn't know it was a joke at first. It's like, we can't have that.
No. All right. A quick break. And I see all the calls. We're going to get to as many of you as we can. I promise. 312-981-7200. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Nice fake air guitar, Bill.
I'm playing the bouzouki.
A bouzouki.
It's an instrument that I'm air playing right now. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder.
And a bouzouki.
Yeah, and I have an air bouzouki.
Are you bouzouki Bill?
I'm bouzouki Bill. 312-981-7200. Give us a call. Give us a text.
All right, there's this new law, House Bill 2. It's all otherwise known as the Public Facilities Privacy and Security Act. And Ringo Starr, Bruce Springsteen, Bryan Adams, they have canceled their shows in North Carolina because they say, well, Ringo says, I'm sorry to disappoint my fans in the area, but we need to take a stand against this hatred, spread peace and love. And there seems to be some truth to that. The law says that what you are born how you are born and what's on your birth certificate will determine which bathroom you go into.
So always carry your birth certificate with you when you have to use the restroom.
See, that's another
always.
Thing. And as listener Mark with the lovely daughter commented,
yeah.
Who is going to, I mean, you get a bathroom attendant if you're lucky enough to be in a nice restroom.
Yeah.
You have a bathroom attendant where you can borrow some hairspray or Q-tips
right.
or whatever you need.
Right.
Now, are they going to have to say, drop them?
They're going to have to, yeah. Yes. Yes. That's the future.
I don't really understand it. Hi, Tina.
Hi there. How are you?
We're good. What do you think?
Good. Well, I don't have an opinion on that. I think it's each his own. But I was telling your producer that one time when I was driving to St. Louis, which is about a five-hour ride, I had my seven-year-old grandson with me, and we came to a rest stop on 55, and he did not want to go in the ladies' room.
Hmm.
And I said, well, I will let you go in the man's room, and the outer door was open, but you couldn't see unless you really went all the way in there.
Yeah.
And I said, if anyone comes near you, you scream,
yeah.
and I will come right in after you. And he said, okay, Grandma. And that's what we did.
That seems to work. Why not?
Yeah, it did. It did. Only had to do that one other time in a McDonald's. And, of course, there's only one stall, so
yeah.
that really wasn't much of an issue. I said, I'm right out here. You scream, I'll be right in there. I didn't care.
And you scream, I scream, we all scream for you to
that's
come in and
right.
help.
That's the way this
that's
saying
right.
goes. Yeah, well, that's
right.
a brilliant idea. Why not?
Thank you, Tina.
Thanks, Tina.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Sorry.
She didn't finish.
I finished for her. 708. The reason the stalls are in the back in a men's room is because typically number two is being done, and other patrons of the restroom should not have to walk through that.
I guess.
You know what? We all... Haven't you read that book when you were a little kid?
Hop on Pop?
Which
no. book? Which book?
Everyone Poops.
Yeah. Soon to be a major motion picture. That Jake Gyllenhaal can do anything he wants to, Wendy.
Joe, I believe you're our last call on this matter.
Hello?
Hello, Joe.
Hey, how you doing? I guess I've been hearing about this for a couple of days, and I think there maybe like needs to be like some clarification.
Sure.
So I think I heard somebody else earlier say like nobody would dress up like a woman just to do that. But there's been several accounts of people who have been arrested for being in women's bathrooms and simply dressing up as women. Another thing is if you transgender, you can physically or legally change your birth certificate.
Right.
Oh, you can?
Yes.
Yeah, I would imagine,
but
sure.
But why go through all that trouble?
Yeah.
So, here's the thing is, so I believe this bill also only addresses the public situation so that private companies could mandate their own, or I think an additional bathroom is a great idea.
Yeah.
But it gives a legal framework for somebody who is, they come in and say, I'm just going to say I self-identify, walk into a bathroom and sit in there for 3 hours with women, you know, you wouldn't have any method to be able to remove them.
No.
And then the other thing I like to say is I get a little problem with a lot of these companies and people who kind of pile onto this because I know like Apple has been a big spoken on this, but these are companies who are doing business in countries in the Middle East and other places that have tremendous records, you know, of abuse and stuff against homosexuals and stuff. And I think that they should probably, you know, those would be areas where they should maybe think about of, do we do business in these kind of countries? So
that's an interesting thought. Joe, there's one thing I want to say, though, about this person or people that were arrested in bathrooms. Maybe they dressed as women and then went in and took pictures or videos
of videotaping, right?
Now, are those are those people who are transgendering, or are those just creeps?
No, I think they're
See?
Just in there. But I think what happens is that if you self-identify, and I have a lot of friends who are, you know, and live in the northern part of Chicago, and if you self-identify, I think that creates a legal problem, because how do you prove if somebody really is or is not?
Right, but you also seem to be describing the fact that what people are afraid of is already happening without protection for these people.
Yeah, would you agree with that, Joe?
Right, then if you have this and somebody can say, I self-identify and go in there, then you have, like, what do you do of, you're an individual, and I don't think it's going to be women going into men's rooms, because I think most men would love to have women in the bathroom, but if you're, you know, like, you do it all in the bars. You see women all the time in men's bathrooms.
Yeah, because the line's shorter, and if you have to go,
yeah,
you got to
exactly.
go where you got to go.
You guys are awesome when you're in there. But when
There's your compliment.
Yeah, exactly. Compliment.
Thanks.
When you have a guy who goes in and says he can self-identify, I think then you're putting the women in a bad position of being like, so is this something I report, or am I going to be in a position like how does that affect, and like how would you feel, or what would you do in that situation? Would you be comfortable saying, I think this is a guy. I don't know.
I don't even care. If Bill walked into the girls' bathroom, I would go, dude, Bill, you're in the wrong one.
Yep.
But I mean, if he continued to go, I would. Who did I care?
And I dress like a painter, and I always have a can of paint. So in a case like that, I just start painting a wall.
Yeah, I think that just like before everyone kind of like jumps in and says, I did this for this reason, I did that for that reason, that people need to step back and think about, okay, so what are the ramifications? I don't know why North Carolina passed the law, but I can see both sides of it, and I think there needs to be some type of...
You guys, wait. Joe, what happened to the don't ask, don't tell? Why do we even have to say, I identify as a woman, I'm going to use this bathroom?
Because in this case, it goes beyond that, because people think that their rights, it's not the rights of the person that you're wondering about for the don't ask, don't tell. These people are saying my rights are being infringed upon.
But how do you even know? I could have gone to the bathroom today and there could have been a man.
Right.
Well, I think in 99% of the times people can kind of, you know, at least where I have lived, that you can kind of get an idea. But for the protection of that situation of where people are doing this intentionally to potentially do harm to somebody going to a bathroom, like a woman, you know, I don't know if it creates the legal framework for that, because if you Google man and women's bathroom, I mean, arrests pop up, and, you know, then the state or the municipality is in a bad position of saying, like, well, were we somewhat complicit in allowing this to happen?
Right. All right, listen, we got to run. I totally get your point.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
Goodbye.
Have a good weekend. All right.
It's not a weekend yet.
Oh.
It does feel like a Friday, doesn't it?
It's coming. I know it's coming. All right, a break. Thanks, everybody, for chiming in on that. A quick break. Steve with the news.
Something
and then
is
more
bothersome to me.
Something more than this?
Yeah.
Is that coming next? All right, we'll discuss this next. Something even more bothersome. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It is 2:09, and it's Wendy Snyder. It's Bill Leff. And something came over in the news that it bothers me, but it really is riling you
this
up.
This is the end of civilization as we know it, Wendy. This story makes me so upset. Here's the story in a nutshell, and I'm going to have Jason Nathanson from ABC News give you all the details. But first of all, Jason, thank you very much for being here. How are you? Everything good?
I'm thrilled to talk about the end of civilization.
This is going to – trust me, Jason, years from now, historians will look back at this and go, that's when it all ended with this. The AMC movie theater chain is one of the largest in the country, correct?
About to be the largest in the world when they merge with another company.
In the world. So these guys have been doing this for a long time. They know what they're doing. Well, they're making a change to the way that we see movies, and I don't think it's a good one. Explain away, Jason.
Possibly making a change. This was floated in an interview yesterday. This is CEO of AMC, Adam Aron, talking about, you know, what everybody wants to do these days. They want more millennials. They want more millennials buying tickets. Everybody wants more millennial eyeballs. That's how all these companies think that they're going to make money. So
right.
What the thought was, he was asked, would appealing to millennials involve allowing texting or cell phone use in the theater? And he says, yes. When you tell a 22-year-old to turn off the phone, they hear, please cut off your left arm above the elbow. You can't tell a 22-year-old to turn off their cell phone. That's not how they live their life. So,
but they do also watch movies on their cell phone, so that's what they should go do and stay out of the theater.
One of the things that they're talking about, so he was then asked, this is in an interview with Variety, and there's this big theater owner convention going on in Las Vegas right now, so that's where this is coming out of. He was asked, would you have a certain section for texting? And he said, that's one possibility. Another, more likely, is we take specific auditoriums and we make them more texting friendly. So, like you go in some theaters, you can go and, you know, it's 21 and over and you can drink in there.
Love
some
those theaters.
Some theaters have, you know, kids' days where it's, you can bring your young kids and enjoy a movie. That would be kind of this. It would be this kind of niche theater where, you know, only millennials, I guess, could go in and text if they wanted to.
All right. What he's not taking into account is that there's plenty of people in that movie theater who are bothered by this sort of behavior. And I understand what he's going for, but you can't just give in to something like that, can you? It's so distracting. If you're sitting anywhere near somebody who's texting during a movie, you're getting the glow of that phone, and that's a distraction. That takes away from the experience.
Well, some say this is a slippery slope, and you open up a little bit, and then that's just going to be the end of it, and it's going to be everybody on their phones. And reaction was swift and immediate. In every article this was posted, and every website, the comment section is, overwhelmingly against this. On Twitter, people, it's inducing rage that this is even a possibility, causing AMC to tweet afterwards that we know the story is out. We know a vast majority of audience wants no texting. If we would ever pursue something like this, we would only do so if we were confident all guests can fully enjoy the movie-going experience. So it seems like they understand that people would be very, very opposed to this. But on the other hand, they want to make sure, because the baby boomer generation and then the generation just after that was a big movie-going generation. We all we grew up going to the movies. That's what we did.
Right.
That's getting less and less and less. And the theaters want to make sure that they can make money. So that means getting a younger audience in as regularly as the older audience.
We're talking to Jason Nathanson, ABC News correspondent. AMC Entertainment CEO is open to allowing texting in some theaters. It's not a done deal. Here's my thought on this, Jason. If you have kids that are texting, or millennials, I guess I shouldn't say kids, maybe they won't be talking, but you'd have to put them up maybe in the balcony or something where it wouldn't, it'd be behind you and above you, so it wouldn't annoy you.
Sure. I actually thought of this about last week or so. I was at a theater with a friend who always texts on his phone, and it's really annoying. Sitting right next to me, and then the light goes up, and then somebody two seats down from me started texting as well or checking their phone or whatever, and it ruins everything. So, I thought, well, if there were a cell phone-friendly section, and if that were away from everybody else where you couldn't see that glow and you could choose to sit there, I guess, like smoking or non-smoking, that might be a way that, because some people just can't stop looking at their phone, and they know that, and they know who they are. So if you could confine them to that section, it might make it easier for the rest of us.
Jason, maybe I'm super sensitive to this, but I notice if somebody pulls out their phone, they can be 12 or 14 rows away from me. I still see the glowy lights. I still know what's going on, and it takes me out of the movie.
You can turn your screen down where people wouldn't see it. Did your friend who was texting during the movie actually turn his screen down?
You can still see it, and you can make it less bright. You can turn it a different way. If you're susceptible to that, like I am too, you're going to see it no matter what. And then it does. Then it ruins you're in the movie, and then you're completely out of it. Then you're thinking about all these different things. You think how you want to punch the person next to you.
Right.
It just
right. Is that allowed? Will AMC allow us to punch people next to us if they text?
That's a possibility. We have to talk to the CEO about that. But, and then on the other hand, a lot of people, because of what I do, I go to movies a lot, and I often go by myself. And sometimes I do want to check my phone, or I want to take notes on the movie that I'm seeing. Or sometimes, I think the younger generation is getting more and more used to the second screen experience where they watch something at home, they watch a TV show, and they're on Twitter looking at all the reactions or whatever thing that they want to look at. Some people might want to do that with the movies as well and follow other people's reactions. I don't know. It's not for me, but there's a different generation out there that's growing up in a different way.
All right, maybe, Bill, punching someone would be bad, but maybe if you could throw Reese's Pieces at them, then the concession stand sales will go up,
right,
and we'd all be happy.
Right.
I'd open my mouth for that. If you want to throw Reese's Pieces at me, I'm happily... Mouth open. Let's do it.
I thought we were making progress because in the last couple of years, I don't know that this makes a huge dent, but in almost every movie theater I've been in, including some AMC theaters, it says at the very beginning that you're not allowed to text during the movie for the good of those around you. Turn your phone off. So I thought, well, we're making some progress. This is a step in the wrong direction.
It's been, it's become, as the phones have become more prevalent over the past 10 years, there's been more of a social pact and etiquette and these signs that say, don't do this. Even though we know you want to, and that buzz goes off in your pocket and you really want to check it, it's just be a good member of society and don't do it. And people have been following along for the most part, but there are people that don't. And you know what? Putting them in their own section might help that.
Maybe.
All right. And other news I'd like you to break on other radio stations, because when we talked about Reese's Pieces, do you know what I just saw at Walgreens?
What's that?
They now have peanut Reese's Pieces.
Oh, yeah.
You knew that?
Yeah.
Did you know that, Jason?
This is brand new news to me.
I've never seen a peanut Reese's Pieces. That's only going to double your peanutty pleasure.
Sure it is. Of course it is. Well, Jason, this, you know, this is very, very upsetting, and we hope like crazy that it doesn't go through, because this, for people who really enjoy films and the experience that you get in a movie theater, this just takes you out of it every time. So I'm hoping this doesn't happen.
And it might encourage people to go for that new thing where they're floating about, you know, you can watch first run movies at home and pay $50.
Yeah.
Not go to the theater anymore. A lot of people are saying, hey, that sounds better and better if you're going to allow texting in theaters.
So true. Jason, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Anytime, guys.
Jason
thanks.
Nathanson of ABC News. All right, we'll take a quick break.
You know about the peanut Reese's
Pieces?
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think they're brand new.
Oh, yeah. I'm on a call list. They call me whenever they try any new Reese's Pieces flavors. I have some other shattering news from the world of show business.
Really?
For you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some shattering news from
nice
the world
tease.
Of show business coming across next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. I'm almost reluctant to share this news because it is very sad news. We knew that it would happen eventually.
They've removed the peanut Reese's Pieces from the shelves that I just discovered.
Oh, no, those are still intact. You can still get yourself some peanut-flavored Reese's Pieces. That's not, you don't have to worry about that. That's as good as gold. Wendy, are you sitting down? If you're sitting down, sit down more. Can you sit down just a little bit more?
Do you want me to lay in the fetal position?
Yeah, you might need to. Arthur Anderson has passed away.
The fish and chips guy?
No,
Arthur Treacher.
That's Arthur Treacher. He is still passed away. He is still gone.
I know the name.
Arthur Anderson, and not Stuart Anderson, the owner of the Cattle Company restaurant.
I don't know who that is.
Lonnie Come Anderson's on. Doing fine.
I know her.
You know Arthur Anderson?
Arthur Anderson, Wendy.
No.
The original voice of the Lucky Charms leprechaun is no longer amongst us.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the accounting firm.
No, I think he is also gone.
Yeah.
This is not a good time for anyone named Arthur Anderson.
I thought he was so magically delicious.
Well, can I play? Here's a little clip. Now, he's been doing these commercials for decades and decades and decades. He doesn't do them anymore. He had retired. He was 93 years old. But this is Arthur Anderson in his heyday playing the role of the Lucky Charms leprechaun, whose name is also Lucky. Listen to his work.
Catch that leprechaun. He's got Lucky Charms. They're magically delicious.
Always after me, Lucky Charms. The frosted old cereal with sweet surprises. Tarts, moons, stars, clovers. See? Magically delicious. They're coming. I make a tunnel.
Frosted Lucky Charms with sweet surprises.
Magically delicious.
No longer among us, Arthur Anderson, 93 years old.
That's really sad, but you know what? I know what killed him.
What?
How old was he?
He was 93. What do you think killed him?
Well, they've changed the leprechaun on the Lucky Charms box, and yeah. I know they have some throwback ones where you can see the guy who we're used to.
Yeah.
You know, but the new Lucky Charms.
The bow-legged leprechaun.
Well, he's just spreading his legs.
I couldn't make my legs do what he's doing, could you?
Yeah, if you were jumping for joy.
I couldn't do what he's doing.
Yes, you could. But they have a new Lucky Charms box. Yeah. And in fact, it's funny, I will take a picture of our box that's on top of our fridge tonight because my son Dylan defaced it because he hates the new Lucky Charms leprechaun.
Demonic looking.
It's a travesty.
Right. Right, right, right.
I know they did the throwback boxes, but when this new leprechaun came on, that's what caused Arthur Anderson to...
Was this a step in the wrong direction for him?
Yeah.
Now, that commercial that we played for the Lucky Charms, that was from sometime in the late 1960s. He was the voice of Lucky from 1963 to 1992. So 29 years is the voice of the Lucky Charms leprechaun. In almost every one of those commercials, it started out with the same line, having something to do with the fact that he has stolen the Lucky Charms. If you look at almost any cereal commercial, it's all based on the same thing. Somebody is stealing somebody else's breakfast cereal. Maybe it's Fred and Barney stealing each other's Cocoa Pebbles or Fruity Pebbles. Maybe it's Sonny.
Jean Lafitte.
Jean Lafitte is always stealing Captain Crunch. Sonny is always stealing Cocoa Puffs. There's something going on in the cereal world. Even though you can get a box of cereal for $3.40, there's something going on in the advertising of cereals that leads you to believe that whatever cereal you have, somebody's going to steal it from you.
You're absolutely right.
I don't know
right
what it is.
That.
Every cereal.
I'm sorry, that Lucky Charms is one of my weaknesses, and that there's always a box of Lucky Charms in our house.
Do you remember, first of all, you remember the shapes, the obvious shapes that they would have? In
yeah,
all
but
of
they
them.
Added some, didn't they?
Well, towards the end, they added new blue clovers.
Oh, right. Can I just tell you something about the marshmallows, though? That yeah. They are magically delicious.
You can't deny that.
But they're too hard.
Well, the stale ones are hard. If you get them fresh, they're still puffy and
they're
you
not,
don't think?
You don't want them too marshmallowy.
Right.
Well, I know, but they kind of hurt your teeth. I'm getting shivers thinking about the crunchiness because they're not like a real marshmallow, obviously, is too soft to be
sure.
a Lucky Charms.
You can't put that in there.
But, you know, I know you're going to be shocked because there is something wrong with me. I kind of like when cereal does get a little soggy.
Do you? Why? What's
because
in it for
it
you?
Gets better at that point. You start eating it crunchy, but then all of a sudden it soaks in the milk. And it's okay for it to get a little soggy, not like limp, like Life cereal used to get.
Yeah.
That used to turn into porridge.
Right.
But
right.
a little bit of give on your teeth is nice.
Yeah.
But the marshmallows don't have any give when they get wet.
Huh.
And they are so... I'm really getting shivers down my spine because they're just... They're hard.
See, that's
tell us about it. We want to hear.
We want more detail. See, for me, it doesn't apply because I don't... As you know, I don't milk my cereal. I want cereal to be...
Do you milk your cow?
No. Mm-mm. I want cereal box to bowl to mouth. There's never any milk on it.
You don't even need a bowl. Why don't you just stick your hand in there and eat it?
Because then I have Fruit Loops all over my arm all day. People can look at me and they know what kind of cereal. I just see them on the street and they'll go, today was a kaboom day, wasn't it? Yeah, you could tell by my arm. It's not. That's rude to other family members. I will put it in
get
a bowl.
Get your own box.
See, that's not a bad move.
You should get your own box.
I've earned it, I think. Don't you?
You know, Rizzo's got his own cereal this year. You should have your own cereal.
Anthony Rizzo does?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Good
for
get
him.
That.
Are they called Rizzo's cereal? Like
Rizzo's?
Cheerios? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's excellent. I didn't know that. What does it taste like?
Anthony Rizzo?
It tastes like Anthony Rizzo.
Like an old sweatband.
Well, you got to put the milk in.
All right, a quick break. I think there's more show coming right after the news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He's an excitable boy, all right. His name is David Hochberg from Pearl Mortgage. He's vice president of lending. And David, how the heck are you?
I'm fantastic. Great day.
You look...
marvelous.
Yes, you do,
you
David.
Do.
What are you doing? Something's
going
on with you.
I was on
you.
WGN TV this morning.
Oh, that's why you're dressed up.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, you got to look a little presentable. A lot
sure.
more presentable than you do when you're on radio.
We know
are
that.
Are you kidding? Bill dresses for success.
Yeah,
he's wearing a button-down shirt, which
yeah.
is unbuttoned
yeah,
today.
Yeah, you look great. With a baseball hat.
Yeah.
That's right. First time I've ever seen you in a baseball
dress
hat.
Dress casual.
I understand.
Dress casual. we know how much you love helping people, and
yeah.
you just were telling Wendy and myself a story that I think is great. You are currently searching for a vet
yes.
to do something for you, and I think this is great.
We have everybody. We have an opening on my team. Pearl Mortgage has about 140 loan officers. I have a group called the Team Hochberg, you know, Real Original, mm-hmm. Of nine loan officers, including myself. And we have an opening for a veteran, somebody that a man or woman that have served in the armed forces, that's a licensed mortgage originator, that knows VA loans. And join our team. Hopefully you're doing, you know, you'd like to have your own production, four or five loans of your own production. We'll supply you with leads that mm-hmm. Coming off the radio. And I would love to have a veteran talk to other veterans about VA loans that are specifically for veterans and families of surviving spouses of veterans.
Can I say something, though? There are a lot of veterans out there who don't know about VA loans and don't know all the secrets.
Amazing.
And
you're right. It's sad that they served in our armed forces, put the time in, did all of what they had to do to earn their VA entitlement. That's what it's called, a VA
right.
entitlement, to secure a VA loan. And they don't even know that they qualify. And here's the even scarier part, Wendy, that a lot of the spouses that are surviving spouses qualify for a VA loan, even though their wife or husband passed away. They qualify for VA loans as well. So there's an unbelievable opportunity out there for a veteran, somebody that has served in the armed forces, that has mortgage loan licensing and is a licensed mortgage originator, has passed their FBI background check, has an MLS number. I know that you're real big.
I'm a big fan of the NMLS numbers.
I know
numbers.
You are, and I appreciate you have it tattooed. You show me my tattoo, yep. My NMLS number on your
thigh. Had that
put
on thigh. My lower thigh.
No, I thought that was your tramp stamp.
Nope. Well, it is. It's for me, and so I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
No problem. You're and yeah, there's an opportunity.
You're going to scare people, David, if you haven't already.
No. And so if you're a licensed mortgage originator that has served in the armed forces that knows the ins and outs of VA loans, please call me 312-751-1333 or know of somebody. It might not be you, but know of somebody if it's a family member, friend, neighbor, coworker, whatever, that originates VA loans and wants to join the fastest growing team in the mortgage industry, one of the largest producing teams in the mortgage industry. Love to talk to you about an opportunity.
You yourself, I don't believe, unless I don't know this about you, but you didn't serve, but I know what an advocate you are for vets. Is there a reason you're so into this?
Yeah.
We applaud you for it.
Well, I never served. Yeah. And the only thing you want me to serve a veteran would be a sandwich because you don't want me in the shape that I'm in. Forget
right.
about it.
All right.
Maybe in a food line, dishing out, at the mess hall. But yeah. I never served. But I talked to a ton of veterans in the line of work that I do. And even before I got into this line of work, I was in the scrap iron and metal industry. And I was in and out of steel mills all the time and scrap iron and metal yards all the time. Mm-hmm. And the best people that I found to talk with and to talk to and, salt of the earth men and women are, were veterans. And especially injured veterans that came home with less body parts than they left with or came back a different person than they left. You leave, you're 18, 17, 18, I guess you got to be 18, graduate high school, 18, 19, 20 years old. You come back, you're 21, 22, 23, and sometimes your parents don't even recognize you because you've changed so much, not only, physically, but mentally as well, unfortunately.
Sure.
And it touches me because I can't sit here doing what I do every day.
Yeah.
My family and my three little girls don't have the freedoms that we have. You don't have the freedoms that you have, or Wendy and everybody listening. We don't have the freedoms that we have because of what those men and women do every single day and put their lives on the line so we could do what we have and have the freedoms that we have. And I say that from the bottom of my heart. I mean every word of it.
Good. Very, very nice to hear that.
Yes, you do. And you always have been helping people. And sometimes people want to refinance. Maybe their rate is pretty high.
Yeah.
And you can contact David. We'll tell you how to do that. And sometimes people are credit challenged and can't refi at that particular time. Or maybe they want to buy their first house and they can't do it. But you really give them advice, even though you can't help them right then and there.
Correct. Yeah. And a lot of people, I had a lady come to me just last week. She's like, hey, everything's great. I want to try to enhance my credit. I'm like, okay, do you have any collections or judgments or any tax liens? Nope, all clean on all that. I send her over to my team at First Midwest Bank to enhance her credit scores. Turns out she has three open collections that she didn't even know that she had. One was for like $300, one was for like $600, and one was for like $4,500. Okay, so
I have a $60 parking ticket in collections that I didn't even know I had.
And that's costing you about 50 to 60 points off your credit scores.
For $60?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's a collection. It's an elephant on your head. So it doesn't matter how big the elephant is.
I like it
is.
There.
I know. That's why we hang out.
Did you see, by the way, really quick.
I was wondering where my elephant was, by the way.
It's on Wendy's head. Did you see the piece on John Oliver's show on HBO the other night, on Sunday night? He talked about credit unions, the three major credit unions.
No, I missed that.
And
he's
all the
great,
mistakes
the
he is. He does he's a great terrible. Job on his show. All the mistakes that are on the big three and so many people who are denied loans or lose jobs or can't get a house or an apartment because they check the big three, the credit scores, and there's ridiculous mistakes that they just don't correct.
Right. And that's why you need to get ahead of it. And again, I use this analogy all the time. The marathon is run at the end of October, typically beginning of November every single year. It's usually around my wife's birthday in November.
Yeah.
Okay. October 10th, 10/11 is my wife's birthday. It's always right around her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I always use this analogy. When you're training for the marathon, you don't strap on sneakers in September, right? You strap on the sneakers now and you start running. So for some reason you could get through 26.2 miles. Why you would want to do that, I don't know, but some people do. I don't like being in a car that long, but that's fine. Okay. It's not my thing, but you just don't strap on the sneakers on September 15th to run the marathon.
Takes some planning.
Takes some planning.
Right.
Takes some organization. It takes some training. Mm-hmm. Pull your credit now if you plan on buying at the end of the year. Make sure there's no barnacles there. Like this lady who doesn't have any collections but got over $5,000 worth of collections. Start doing it now. A lot of people are like, oh, I want to go buy a house. And then they start calling up realtors, which I'm a big fan of calling up realtors. And, you know, want to go get start looking. The first thing the realtor is going to say, are you pre-qualified? They're going to be like, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because the realtor is not going to want to burn their time.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to start planning now. If you want to buy at the end of the year, we should be looking at your credit now. We should be checking underneath the hood, making sure everything's firing right. And if you've got some things going on, like I just had a guy file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. Okay, his attorney forgot to file it with two judgments. So now we've got to go back to court. Include the two judgments. It's like $10,000 worth of judgments. It's going to cost another $800 because the attorney screwed up the deal 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's going to take 3-4 weeks to get into court to redo this. Okay, so and I'm in the middle of a refinance right now. Okay, imagine if you're about ready to close on a loan, the closing just got kicked out 3-4 weeks.
Right.
So this is the stuff you need to get on because those judgments are costing him 40-50 points on his credit report. So it's all a big soup, and people don't understand that. Listen, Equifax, Experian, TransUnion, they're the three big ones. They're mm-hmm. not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm best buddies with the retired chief operating officer, David Emery of TransUnion. They have mistakes all the time. It's an imperfect world, but it takes time to correct these inaccuracies on your credit report. It can be fixed. If you have the documentation and the backup to fix it, it'll be fixed. But again, they're only, to the defense of the three big ones, they're only as good as the information that they're being supplied by the creditors that are giving them information.
Right.
So if the creditor, let's say ABC Credit Card, has got something bad that reported against you 4 years ago, and they don't send anything to the three credit bureaus to remove it, the credit bureaus aren't going to remove it. There's millions of companies out there are reporting to the credit collection agencies.
Yep.
So that's why you got to stay on top.
And how do you get it removed? If it's a case that is, they say it's open, but it isn't, and you have the documentation to prove it, who do you call? The
original creditor.
Okay.
And say, you need to send me a letter saying that account number ABC123 has been paid in full and deleted off of your credit report. They'll send that letter to the credit agencies. Don't trust them to send that letter,
mm-hmm.
right? Fasten your own seatbelt.
Mm-hmm.
Have them send you the letter to yourself so you have a copy, and then you go online and you upload it digitally to the three credit bureaus. You go to annualcreditreport.com.
Mm-hmm.
Again, be careful how you enter that because
there is a, right?
It goes to a very interesting website if you hit the wrong letter. annualcreditreport.com. Run your credit report. Don't pay to get the scores because the scores are worthless. Download a copy of a report, scrub it down, and then when you file a complaint, a dispute, upload it to their website, have your report number. TransUnion will give you a report number. All three will give you a report number and say, here's a copy of ABC credit card disputing that, saying that it's gone. Please update your report. They have 30 days by federal law to update the report, and if you upload it digitally, it'll save you a week of time.
All right.
What if these people whose accounts you closed are not, they don't send you the letter?
Well, then you put in a dispute. You put in a dispute saying, I paid it. I talked to them. They said they were going to send a letter. I talked to Tom. I talked to Sally. I talked to Steve. Write names down. Write the extension down. Write the time that you talked to them. Find out what office they're in, what country they're talking to from. The more information you have, this is your credit, for God's sakes. 1 point on a credit report will cost you over $50,000 in mortgage payments over the life of a 30-year fixed
loan.
Just
1 point.
The difference between a 679 and a 680 credit score will cost you $50,000 in the adjustment in the rate over 30 years. Because you're going to be in a much higher rate, a quarter to 3/8 of a point higher.
That's huge.
On a $300,000-$400,000 loan, it costs you over $50,000 in added mortgage payments.
All right, hold that thought. David Hochberg is here of Pearl Mortgage. He's the vice president of lending. You can reach him at 312-751-1333. And WGNDavid.com is the best website to get him. I know there's calls on hold. Stay there. We'll get to those in just a little bit. It's 312-981-7200 on WGN.
He's David Hochberg, and he has helped me refi several times. He has helped me with my credit. What can I say? My credit issues?
Challenges.
All right, I like that better.
Challenges.
He gives great advice, and if he can't help you out, he will give you ways to make your credit rating better, so he will ultimately be able to help you out. And we have people who want to talk to you. Is that good?
Yeah, bring it on.
All right, is this Rami?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Rami.
How you doing, Wendy?
Great.
Do you have a question for David?
Yes, I do. Hi, David.
Hi, Rami.
Here's my question. How soon can me and my husband get pre-qualified for a home loan, having in mind that he's a veteran, but he had a foreclosure, will be 2 years in August?
Okay. You could get pre-qualified now. Did the VA loan, did the loan that went into foreclosure, was that a VA loan as well or no?
No.
Was it an FHA loan?
Yes, it was.
It was an FHA loan. Okay, so here's the deal. We have to find out, and I got burnt on this once before, and now I ask this question all the time. We have to find out not only when the close date was, but when FHA paid off the loan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
Yeah, he had a letter, you know, exactly when that, happened.
Okay, VA allows veterans to buy, I believe after, I know it's 1 day after a Chapter 13, I think it's either 1 or 2 years after a foreclosure. But if you put, if we could put you on hold and have give Elif your phone number or just call me at the office, 312-751-1333,
okay.
I will check for you and call you back today, okay?
Very good. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rami.
Thank your husband for his service.
Sure.
Okay, I'm putting her on hold. Elif, if you can get her number, and David will give her a call. 312-981-7200.
That's why I need a veteran with VA experience.
For stories just like that one.
You know, to help Rami and her husband out.
Right.
And I'd love to do that.
Another question that has been texted in, and this is a great question. I have $11,000 in credit card debt. Am I better off just paying them down or getting a consolidation loan? Because a lot of times you will get a letter that says, oh, understand you're a little bit in debt. We can eliminate that debt and you can pay this lower balance. But that's still not good to do, is it?
Well, it's a slippery slope. Okay, $11,000 worth of credit card debt with a 4% minimum payment is costing this person probably $440 a month, somewhere in there.
Jeez.
Okay. You know, roundabout. That's what it's going to cost.
Look at how quickly he figures that out.
Yeah. Right.
So you know, you could go to, if you have good credit, First Midwest Bank has what's called an express home improvement loan. It's an unsecured loan that you could borrow up to, I believe, $35,000. And it's the equivalent of a car payment of about $370. So this lady right here, or this texter, I should say, right here, go to First Midwest Bank. Go to if you give me a call at the office, 312-751-1333. I'll hook you up with my ladies over at First Midwest Bank to talk about an express home improvement loan. Also look at 401k loans. I know some financial planners look down on that, but you're borrowing money out of your own investments and paying yourself back. So what better if you think your job's secure, go in that direction, or if you've got $500-$600 a month free, to start knocking the heck out of it, and it'll go down.
But
just
if you
be
take,
careful of the consolidation loan.
Yeah, because if you take like the letters that come to you, because I've gotten them, I'll admit it, and it's like you can eliminate, you know, talk to us and we'll cut
high
that
rates.
Debt in half.
High rates.
That's not really true, though.
They can, but then look at the negative 15 font that nobody reads, and then here comes the 540 Metro right upside your head, and then you get whacked again.
Right, so, in English, what does that mean?
That means that be careful of what you're going into, because if it sounds too good to be true, it typically is. Okay.
Was that always the case with consolidation loans? Because I know they've existed for decades. Have they always been?
You got to be careful. You got to be careful of the high rates. They typically have usury rates. Listen, I'm just making a general statement. I hate when people make general statement about all mortgage brokers are bad, right? But just be very, very careful what you're doing and who you're working with. Read the fine print, because typically it comes with a high interest rate. You know, for an introductory period, it's really low. Then whammo, right? It's just like everybody with the HELOC. I talked to a guy off of WGN last week. Oh, yeah, I've been paying $300 a month, and now it's up to $1,800 a month. Okay, well, your HELOC, home equity line of credit that you took out 10 years ago, has ballooned.
Was interest only for a while, and
for
then
10 years,
boom.
120 months, and you did nothing to it. And now here we go. I talked to him on Sunday, actually. I know exactly. He's a retired cop. His payment went from $300 to like $1,400, $1,500. He's like, I can't afford the payment anymore. I'm like, how long have you been making the payment? 6 months. I'm like, what the hell are you waiting for?
Right.
Let's go.
Right.
You know, the time to call is when you're in the 115th month, not the 130th month.
So true. David, great to see you. You can reach David a couple of ways by calling him at 312-751-1333. He's over at Pearl Mortgage.
His website, well, do the email, wgndavid.com. That has all the information there.
Yeah, you could go there. You could email me directly from there. You could apply for a loan there. But again, even if we can't help you, we're gonna give you free advice.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to you like a human being, and we're going to try to do everything we can to help you. What's in your best interest, not in our best interest. And if it's in your best interest not to do a loan, we're going to tell you flat out, don't do a loan.
Absolutely. Thanks, David.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Hello, Roe and Anna.
Hello, hey. Wendy and
Hello,
Bill.
Hello, Wendy.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Bill. Bill and Wendy, or whatever you, however we do this around here. Hold on. I had the list here. I bring a list now.
A list of things?
Don't rattle it off the top of your head?
What is on the list?
Well, I forget. You know, yeah. This has happened to you. You go home or you see a friend or whatever, and they say, hey, what did you do on the show today? And you're like, I have no idea.
Yeah. Kind of erased it.
Yeah. And like, it always, like the minute we leave, I could not tell you what happened
sure.
on the show.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Why is that?
Well, because
think?
We have to clear the cash to get ready for tomorrow.
You're right, but you can tell people if it was a good show or a bad show.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, you have a feeling when you get done.
It's like, how was the show? Great. Mm-hmm. What'd you do? No idea.
I have to reintroduce myself to Wendy every morning. She's like, I know we've worked together. And
Who
I
are you again?
Isn't that crazy?
That is very weird.
I don't know why that is.
Well, when we have a good show, we immediately go to Sardi's.
Oh, you do?
And
celebrate.
We celebrate. I walk in with my top hat. Hello, my good man. Yeah. Table for six.
Small applause from all the tables as you walk through.
People stand up. And then if it's a really good show, you get the slow clap.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Yeah, like Norma Ray a little bit like that, too.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. It's
people like you.
Yeah. That's
and then
works.
Cup comes over and congratulates
right.
you.
I heard that today that Bunny, what was the guy's name? Bunny.
What was his name? The guy who wrote jokes for him?
Yes.
Bunny somebody, right?
Like Buddy Goldstein or something.
Yeah.
Bunny Goldstein stopped and said that there was a great show today. Let me buy you a bottle of water. Actually, a glass of tap water. Oh, Mater D.
Bunny Ivan?
Bunny Ivan.
That's
Bunny Ivan.
Good
Bunny
Ivan. What is wrong with you?
I don't know.
The things he retains.
He knows all of it.
I want to tell you something. You did a story today about the Lucky Charms leprechaun being dead.
Yep.
Which, oh, spoiler alert for the kids.
I know.
Sorry about that.
I know.
But I mean, it was like, I went, oh, when I heard it, I'm like, oh, no.
Sad.
And he'd been still doing it, right?
I mean, no, he stopped a couple of years ago. He was still doing voices and stuff, but no longer Lucky Charms. But around the age of 75 or 80, they decided
he had to give up.
We got to get somebody else for this.
Did he speak with an Irish accent?
No.
No, that
he's
was
not Irish at all.
Those guys who do that kind of cartoon stuff and the jingles are so badass.
Yeah.
Those guys are so good at what they do.
Uh-huh.
And they can do that. They can sound like kids, you know, forever.
Right.
It's weird. It's right. it's kind of strange.
Yeah.
Not like us. We just ramble and have the same voice every day.
Don't tell anybody.
Well, not you.
Excuse me. Hello.
You have creepy voices. Yes, I know.
I have three different voices I can
do. At least.
Yeah,
but okay, never mind.
At least.
I'm gonna
don't invite
it.
Creepy guys.
I'm not.
Yeah, I know what you're doing. You're afraid now. You're afraid one of these voices is going to hijack the show. I get it.
No, actually, I would like it. That's why I like to bring it up, because it bothers Anna.
Do you like Creepy Guy?
Kind of.
Doesn't it bother you?
I like it when I'm in my car away from the studio.
Here it comes.
Thank you very much, Wendy. I just want to tell you that this Lewandowski guy is totally not guilty of doing anything wrong. I think we should actually start pepper spraying all people who disagree with me.
I'm imagining a pretty hot Creepy Guy, though.
I'm imagining.
Really? I don't think so.
Bono will sound like in 20 years. It's exactly like that.
Am I bugging you? I don't mean to bug you.
That's Bono in 20 years.
have you ever seen a child in Africa with a fly on his lips? No clean drinking water.
It is sort of the same thing. Yeah, you just kind of drop the little Irish thing under.
Yeah.
The Lucky Charms guy. Look what we did. We brought it all around.
Bono's going to be the new Lucky Charms guy.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Hello, kids. Kids, I don't mean to bug you,
but
we need you to have this sugary cereal.
Oh, God. All right. Good luck to all of us.